Our last speaker is Dr. Howe, who's Chief of Surgical Oncology and Endocrine Surgery at the University of Iowa and Vice President of the Society of Surgical Oncology. He's going to talk about increasing incidence of neuroendocrine tumors and how to identify them and the general principles for managing small bowel neuroendocrine tumors.
Thank you, Dave. I have no disclosures. So neuroendocrine tumors, neuroendocrine cells are very similar to nerve cells in that they have synaptic vesicles, but instead of secreting neurotransmitters, they secrete hormones like serotonin, histamine, and kallikrein and other substances. They also have a variety of receptors on their cell surface, one of which is somatostatin, which is a target for therapy. The distribution of neuroendocrine tumors from the SEER database is shown here, and the most common ones we're going to take care of as general surgeons are going to be those of the small intestine and the pancreas, with an incidence of 0.67 per 100,000 for the small bowel and 0.32 for the pancreas. If we look at the right here, we see the incidence of the fraction of which are in all neuroendocrine tumors. So 13% of all neuroendocrine tumors are from the small bowel and 6% of the pancreas. And you can see that actually there are more lung neuroendocrine tumors and rectal neuroendocrine tumors, but many of these are benign. If we look at malignant neuroendocrine tumors, then really the most common is going to be the small bowel, which accounts for about 55%, the pancreas about 20%, and then the lung and bronchus at about 20 to 25%. The incidence of these tumors has been increasing since 1973. This is a four-decade survey over in the SEER database, and we can see that small bowel neuroendocrine tumors have increased from 2 cases per million to 12 cases per million over these 40 years. And from pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors, it has increased from 2 to 8 per million. So that's a 4 and 6-fold increase, respectively. And it's not really clear why this is happening. It's probably very likely that patients are getting CAT scans for even the most minor of abdominal complaints, and now we're starting to pick up these telltale signs of these tumors, and they're being identified. One other thing to mention is that the small bowel neuroendocrine tumor has overtaken adenocarcinoma as the most common tumor in the small bowel, and whereas PNETs consist of about 3% of all pancreatic tumors. Now, the telltale signs of a small bowel neuroendocrine tumor on CT scan are small bowel thickening or a mass. Patients may have a small bowel obstruction, but really the main thing that I look for is mesenteric lymphadenopathy. So if you see enlarged nodes in the mesentery, that's going to make you highly suspicious for a carcinoid tumor. In the presence of bilobar liver metastases, that make you even more suspicious. And some of these patients will have peritoneal lesions because of transserosal growth of these tumors. And this is just a case of mesenteric lymphadenopathy. This is an axial and this is a coronal view. And you can clearly see that there are three lymph nodes here in an ileocolic distribution. And when you see this, you're really going to be thinking about a small bowel carcinoid. A lot of these things will have calcifications within the nodes. And other things that should be in the differential would be adenocarcinoma, lymphoma, mesenteric lymphadenitis, and sclerosing mesenteritis. But most of those other conditions don't really look exactly like this. This patient also has a hematogenous metastasis to the ovary. Here's another patient who presents with a liver lesion. If you do a biopsy of this liver lesion, it shows a neuroendocrine tumor. And if you have these mesenteric lymph nodes as shown here, that's going to be a small bowel neuroendocrine tumor. With respects to what you do next, we generally explore patients and you palpate the small bowel. And here's a case of a Meckel's diverticulum with a small neuroendocrine tumor in it. These tumors can be very, very small. You can have a lot of nodal disease. You can have extensive liver metastases with a very small primary. So the primary often will not be seen on the imaging test, but the mesenteric lymph nodes often will. With regards to PNETs on CT scans, well, most of these are going to be found by CT scan. Over 90%, there are cases where the tumor is in the tail of the pancreas, where it kind of merges into the hilum of the spleen, where those might be missed. There are also splenules, which will enhance and look like a neuroendocrine tumor that are not. But the characteristic that you're going to look for on these in a good arterial phase CT is that they'll enhance. There are more capillaries in those tumors, and they'll take up more contrast. You might also see peripancreatic, portal, and gastric nodes, and you might see enhancing liver lesions as well. This just shows a patient with a tumor in the tail of the pancreas. This one is not enhancing. You see some calcifications in it, though, and that's another sign that it might be a neuroendocrine tumor. This patient has enhancing liver masses, and you can see this on this coronal view. This is a DOTA PET scan, which can be very useful in these patients, and this takes advantage of the fact that these tumors have somatostatin receptors on their surface. And here, again, you can see the primary tumor is lighting up with DOTA PET, and this will define it as a neuroendocrine tumor as well, because adenocarcinomas will not have somatostatin receptors. This also shows uptake in the liver metastases, and this is an important scan to get for staging, and it also predicts the response to peptide radioreceptor therapy with radiolabeled somatostatin. This just shows that tumor with the normal pancreas here and this PNET here. So another situation we see often is you'll see liver metastases. They'll get a biopsy. It shows a neuroendocrine tumor. How are you going to figure out where the primary is from? We looked at 197 patients who presented with metastatic neuroendocrine tumors, and we explored 134 of them. And of those, 124 we could figure out where the primary was on the imaging tests preoperatively. 109 primaries were seen with CT, 59 with Octrea scan, and some were found on endoscopy. Some were found with both methods. And then there were 10 patients who we couldn't find the primary on imaging, and 6 we found at the time of surgery. Most of these are in the small bowel, but there was an occasional pancreas that was in the tail. And there were 4 cases where we couldn't find the tumor at all. The most common site of the unknown primary was the small bowel in about 2/3 of cases. In 1/4 of cases, they were in the pancreas. And then we found stomach, duodenal, or rectal tumors in a few other patients. And really the best overall scan was the CT scan with an 81% sensitivity. Octrea scan has now been really replaced by gallium-68 scanning, DOTA PET scanning, and it really wasn't a great test at 56% sensitivity. And endoscopically, some of these lesions will be found as well. This just shows a gallium DOTA PET, and again, it's a very effective way of staging patients. This shows a liver metastasis, and you can just see the subtle yellow color here of the mesenteric lymphadenopathy. But one of the things you'll see with these DOTA PET scans is that you'll often see widespread metastatic disease to bones that you really didn't suspect. And so although these bony metastases often don't change our management, it's important to realize that this is the case. So this is just a children's hospital at the University of Iowa in the tradition of the wave at the end of the first quarter of the football game. And I'm going to move on to the next talk.